People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, you may know that the award-winning South African premier production of the enchanting romantic comedy Shakespeare in Love is returning to the Fugard Theatre. Due to overwhelming demand, I have to say, it'll be performed at the Fugard Theatre from the 14th of August. It was written by Lee Hall and adapted from that Academy Award-winning 1999 film by Tom Stoppard and Mark Norman. The comedy ran for an extended sold-out season at the West End's Noel Coward Theatre in London in 2014. It features a stellar cast of 21 actors, including the return of the lovable fur actor Bogart as Spot the Dog, who captured the hearts of all who saw the show. But also in the show is the distinguished British actor Walter van Dijk, who was recently seen as Major Petkoff in Bernard Shaw's Arms and the Man, directed by Bridget L'Amour at the Watford Palace Theatre. He was also Professor Lyons in Harley and the Davidsons, which is a new American TV miniseries produced by the Discovery Channel and Raw TV. He co-starred with Felicity Dean in the world premiere of a new play by Shelley Silas, directed by Ben Kaplan, entitled This Thing Called Love, as part of a repertory season of four new plays in London. And he's performed in Olivier Award-nominated shows in the West End and worked with some of Britain's finest directors and also worked in America. He is here in Shakespeare in Love as Sir Edmund Tilney, a role that he played in the first production when it was opened at the Fugard Theatre last year, I think it was. Walter, welcome. It's good to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
It's a long list of things. I sort of thought I'd stop there because of all the things you've done, and I want to talk about all the things you've done, but let's talk about Shakespeare in Love, first of all. We all sort of know it from that film, don't we? And I thought, how on earth are you going to adapt that for the theatre? And having seen it, it works so well. Is it good fun to be in?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I mean, it originally was written as a screenplay, and it was about a couple of years ago that they adapted it for the theatre and performed it for the first time in the West End.
So it was actually written as a film script first?
Yes, yes.
Usually it's the other way around.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
And I went to the press night for that production, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, Shakespeare has been a huge influence on my life, and so when Greg Covellis asked me to do Shakespeare in Love, I was absolutely thrilled.
How did it come about? Because I seem to remember you telling me a story that you were out here with your partner, Anthony Marwood, and you were walking past something and you saw, and Anthony said, this part is just for you, or something. Tell me that story.
Well, yes, I popped into the Fugard because a couple of actor friends of mine from the UK had worked at the Fugard before, Timothy West and Sam West, and I had heard about the Fugard, and so I wanted to go and see a show, and I saw that the wonderful South African actor John Carney was performing Driving Miss Daisy, but in an Afrikaans production, which intrigued me. And so I wanted to go and see it. And then I saw, as I had picked up a brochure, that their plan for the autumn season was to do Shakespeare in Love. And something in me just, it intrigued me, and it just clicked. And I contacted Greg Carvelis, and I had one day left in Cape Town before going back to London, and I said, well, can we meet? Can we have a chat? And he said, well, absolutely. So we went for a coffee, and we got on like a house on fire, and he had me read from the script, and about 6 weeks later, when I was back in the UK, I got a rather delicious email offering me the job.
Okay, now tell us about Sir Edmund Tilney, who's not the nicest character in the show.
No. Well, yes, Sir Edmund Tilney, he's the master of revels to Queen Elizabeth I, so it's my job as that character to find the actors to put on productions for Queen Elizabeth, and so I hand out the licenses for the plays, I read the plays, they're censored perhaps heavily, and it's my job as well to prevent in this particular instance, females from working on the stage.
Ah, yes, I remember that, yes. Which is quite a thread through this, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And so I do everything in my power to stop that. Yes. It's funny because it wasn't actually until about the Restoration period. It was Charles II who finally issued a royal warrant giving women permission to act upon the stage.
Right.
So it was about 50 years after Shakespeare died.
But another thing you seem to be doing all the time was closing down theatres.
Yes. Well, you know...
You nasty man.
Yes, yes. Well, there was an awful lot of plague about. And, you know, if you got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people into the theatre watching a show, you know, during plague time, it had dire sort of consequences. So,
So your intentions were honourable.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Walter, before we talk more about the play, let's just see what your first choice of music is. And I see you've chosen Benjamin Britten's War Requiem, an extraordinary work. So I'm most intrigued why you've chosen it and why you've chosen the Dies Irae.
Well, music has always been a huge part of my life. And my father was a composer, so he introduced me to Benjamin Britten. He was deeply, deeply enamoured of Britten's music. And my father wanted me to be an opera singer initially.
Really?
Yes. And so I trained as a singer for about 3 or 4 years, and I was involved in a performance of Britten's War Requiem at Keble College in Oxford with Heather Harper, who was the original soprano, and Meredith Davies conducting. And I remember singing the Dies Irae, and it just put the hairs up on the back of my neck. It was absolutely thrilling. And it's an incredibly important work. You know, Britten was a pacifist. I've been a pacifist all my life. And it's just an extraordinary piece.
Thank you.
they relieve that extraordinary work, the War Requiem by Benjamin Britten. We heard part of the Dies Irae there with the London Symphony Orchestra and Chorus and the conductor Gianendra Nozeda. The first choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, and he is the actor Walter van Dyk, who is in Cape Town to perform in Shakespeare in Love, which is returning to the Fugard by popular demand, and something that has to be on everybody's list to go and see. It's an extraordinary play. And Walter, one of the things that struck me, and you mentioned it as well, it's a big cast, isn't it?
Yes, it's a cast of 21. Yes, and you think, including a dog.
Yeah, yes, they do go on about the dog.
Yes.
And the dog has that lovely name.
Bogard.
Bogard.
Yes, so he's wonderful. He's quite feisty.
What's it like rehearsing with a dog, or even worse, performing with a dog? Surely it's unpredictable.
Well, and it's the unpredictability that's so wonderful.
Oh.
It keeps us on our toes. And, you know, my opening scene is with the dog. But it's wonderful because he spontaneously will do things which feeds the scene. And means that we can be also incredibly spontaneous.
Exactly.
And the audience love it.
Could you improvise, for example? I mean, he may do something unpredictable that throws you all, and you might have to do something improvisatory to get back
to
the script.
I mean, we had one performance the last time we did the show where he decided he was going to grab onto a bit of costume and start, you know,
tugging at it,
and it literally went on for about a minute,
which is a long time.
But the audience were falling about; they absolutely loved it.
Okay. And so with a big ensemble piece like this, the other thing, and Walter, you and I spoke about this before we came to the studio, one thinks of the Fugard as a rather intimate theatre, because it is a small theatre.
Yes.
But with a big production like this, you're not really aware that it's a small theatre, because this is big stuff that comes across at you. And really sort of big performances from everyone.
Yes. Well, you have to fill the space. I mean, the wonderful thing about the Fugard is it has the intimacy, so you can dare to be vocally, you can pitch it,
yes.
You know, and
you might not have to bellow.
Yes, exactly. But at the same time, because you've got the balcony, you do have to remember they're there.
Yes,
exactly.
Quite far away, yeah. Relatively speaking. Now, the role you play, as I said, Walter, is Sir Edmund Tinley, who is not the nicest of characters.
No.
But I was surprised, because I don't think I remember, you play another role as well. Tell me about him.
Sir Robert de Lesseps, who is the father of Viola de Lesseps, and he basically pawns her off for a title. He's a wealthy landowner, but lacking a title, and that's where Lord Wessex comes in. And so she gets wed off fairly quickly.
Isn't she, am I getting confused now, isn't she the love interest of William, of Shakespeare himself?
Indeed, yes, she is. And she is wedded to the idea of becoming one of the players of the Lord Chamberlain's men, but as a female.
But
goes into disguise. She does put on a disguise out of necessity.
Yes. Otherwise, you'd be on her.
Yes,
so Edmund Tilney
would be there
to throw
her
out. Walter, just not moving away from the play, but not from Shakespeare, with this long list of credits to you, which we'll talk about eventually, have you done Shakespeare on stage?
Oh, yes, I have. I've actually, you know, I was about 12 years old when I first saw a televised performance of Merchant of Venice with Laurence Olivier and Jem Plowright. And as a 12-year-old, I was so struck by and moved by the language. And it was a revelation to me. And it was really when I was 12 that I met this British actress, Judy Dyson, who had also studied with the only English pupil of Sarah Bernhardt.
Oh my!
Yes, yes, I know. And so, from the age of 12 till about 18, I actually was a boy player of female parts in Shakespeare's plays, and we went to colleges and schools, and we performed scenes from Shakespeare. But I was playing Celia in As You Like It, Mistress Quickly in Henry IV. And I had a great time. And then finally, once, you know, my voice changed, I then graduated to playing Romeo and Oberon.
So you've done the big ones as well.
Yes, I have. And Feste and Twelfth Night. But I literally spent my entire adolescence performing Shakespeare, and I had a great love for it. And I think it was also I think she inspired a huge sort of respect and reverence for the spoken word and the impact the spoken word can have, and an appreciation of the muscularity of the language.
This is very important what you're saying now, because it is interesting that Shakespeare can still be completely and is still completely relevant. Mm. To hear that language spoken properly, it does not seem pompous. It seems somehow normal when you're watching a Shakespeare play, because it is so glorious, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And it must never be dumbed down or changed.
Oh, absolutely not. And the thing is, when the language is spoken articulately, and when you actually embrace the muscularity of that language and the built-in rhythm of the language, it's very exciting for an audience. Mm. And it actually, I think, communicates the message and the emotion behind it. You know, if you lose that articulation and that muscularity of the word,
and the rhythm,
it really falls apart, and it really doesn't. There's a sort of trend now to kind of mumble your way through it,
yes,
which I think is
with the help of microphones and things.
Yes,
these days sometimes,
or trying to make it very naturalistic sounding. Mm. Like, and I must admit, to be able to make the language very spontaneous so that it sounds as though those words are being spoken for the very first time is indeed a gift. But I think if you start putting in ums and ahs and you know, it just falls apart.
I remember having a conversation with, I don't know if you know him, Marcel Mayer, who was playing Hamlet.
Mm.
And I said, how on earth do you learn those long speeches?
Mm.
And he said something interesting, and it had to do with the rhythm.
Yes.
He used a word which I can't quite remember, that like music.
Mm, absolutely.
The rhythm, Shakespeare helps you with the rhythm.
Absolutely.
In learning these
it
long,
really helps
long
you
speeches.
To remember. Remember the language, and it's that that muscle memory sense,
yes,
as well in the language.
That I like your muscularity analogy there with the actual language. So now let's pause for some music, and I see we have Ravel coming up.
Yes, I've chosen this piece. My partner, who is a musician, we are celebrating 25 years of being together, which is very wonderful. But when we first met, and when I first heard my partner play the violin, he is a violinist, I went to a concert in Oxford, and we, both of us at that time, were falling in love. And we drove back after the concert in separate cars, and I turned on the radio, and the slow movement from the Ravel Piano Concerto in G was playing. And something very surreal happened, because we ended up on the motorway driving side by side for practically the length of the movement, just sort of looking at each other through the windows.
You were not in the same car?
No, we were driving literally alongside each other.
Good
in separate
grief.
Vehicles. But it suddenly became very cinematic, and I was listening to the Ravel and staring through glass at my future partner as we were driving side by side along the motorway. I've never forgotten it.
Thank you.
Well, once again, a difficult fade to fade music of such exquisite beauty. That was the second movement of the Piano Concerto in G Major by Maurice Ravel. That recording featured Marta Argerich with the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Claudio Abbado. The choice of my guest, Walter van Dijk, the actor, who is in town to play Sir Edmund Tinalney.
Yes, Ravel was quoted as saying, "That flowing phrase, how I worked over it bar by bar. It nearly killed me."
And yet when we hear it, Walter, yes, it just seems as though it would have flowed out of him, this
absolutely
beauty. But anyway, we know from Beethoven and all the others about the struggle.
Yes, and it was actually only recently that I discovered that Ravel first got the ideas for that concerto and formulated it musically in his head, travelling from Oxford to London.
Now, how about that?
Yes.
Because of your story.
Yes.
Walter, I want to find out, your biography here is long and incredibly impressive, with all these people you've worked with and famous directors, both in England and in America. And you mentioned the little scene that when you were 12 and watching Olivier and Arlette and that play. How did you get into the whole theatre business?
Well, it was really seeing that kind of completely turned me onto it, and then actually working with this British actress Judy Dyson really had a huge influence on me. But then I studied with Uta Hagen, the legendary Uta Hagen, in New York for quite some time, and she had a profound effect on me. And she had the Herbert Berkoff Studios in New York. She founded with her husband Herbert Berkoff, and she really taught me, I felt, the craft of acting. I always felt up to that point that I was rather winging it, and she really made me appreciate. She gave me a technique, you know, and a structure.
But Walter, I've been calling you here a British actor, but you're of Dutch descent, because
yes,
and you lived in a. Weren't you born in America? Or
I was born in Toronto,
Canada.
Canada. But I grew up in North America, and actually, my first professional job was with the American Repertory Theatre at the age of 18. Robert Brustein, who was then dean of Yale University, the School of Drama there, had the Yale rep. And he wanted to found a company in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And so in 1980, the American Repertory Theatre was formed. And their inaugural production was an absolutely fantastic production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, directed by Alvin Epstein. And they cast me as Snug the Joiner in it. They had auditioned 200 actors in the Boston area, and chose two, and I was lucky enough to be one of them.
So, and that sort of launched you.
And that launched me, and that and so I spent a couple of years there, and then I moved to London to begin my career in the United Kingdom.
And was it relatively easy to begin? You must have known that you had a chance to go across to the United Kingdom and make a career for yourself.
Yes. Well, I really had been given a sort of huge reverence for the tradition of theatre in the United Kingdom. So I knew that that was a place that I wanted to base myself. It seemed to me that you could actually potentially make a living as an actor and could, you know, there is a tradition in the United Kingdom of theatre that goes back
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, centuries.
Before Shakespeare. Indeed. I think let's have another piece of music now, Walter. And I see Handel Messiah is coming up. You see another of your Handel, people that you admire.
Oh, yes, just adore Messiah. Throughout my life, I've just had so much pleasure from listening to it. And
have you ever sung in it?
No, I haven't. I've sung Handel arias from his oratorios, but I've never done the Messiah.
Oh, okay.
But I've chosen Rejoice Greatly, for two reasons, really. There's a connection. My first acting teacher, Ute Hagen, I gave her a call from Göttingen in Germany, and I said, "Oh, Ute, I happen to be in your birth town." And she said, "Oh, well, goodness," she said, "go along to my house. You'll see a plaque. My father founded the Göttingen International Handel Festival." So I went along and I thought, gosh, how marvelous. And so there was a connection there. But I think the biggest connection of all was that when my partner Anthony Marwood and I, when we had our civil union partnership, the singer Susan Gritton sang this particular piece at our wedding, which was just sublime. Thank you.
part of the aria Rejoice Greatly, O Daughter of Zion, from Messiah by Handel, and the soprano there was Susan Gritton with the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir Colin Davis. And another choice of my guest, the actor Walter van Dijk, in town to play Sir Edmund Tilney in Shakespeare in Love at the Fugard Theatre. Walter, as we've been saying, you've had a lot of opportunities and you have had this remarkable career, but what I find also very interesting is that music is very much part of your life, isn't it? After what you said about Handel, you are, your partner is a professional and rather famous violinist, Anthony Marwood, and you have also, I noticed, been involved in lots of narrations with orchestras and not just Peter and the Wolf type.
No, the real thing. Yes, absolutely. I think because I went to music college and I can read music, and that's helped me enormously in that regard, because I've done quite difficult works like Schoenberg's Ode to Napoleon. You really need to be able to read music in order to do that. But I've worked with lots and lots and lots of musicians over the years. And
are there ones that sort of stick out immediately and sort of made an impact on your life?
Yes.
I see, for example, Angela Hewitt's name here among many
others.
Yes,
that's right. Yes, I got asked to her festival in Italy, the Trasimeno Festival, international festival, and she asked me to do Poulenc's L'Histoire du Barbare, and which I did with her at the piano, which was absolutely joyful. And I also narrated the entire Soldier's Tale by Stravinsky. I've done so many productions of and versions of Soldier's
Tale. And do you enjoy that sort of thing?
Oh, I love
it. Narrating along with music, where you are sort of associated with the music rather than being your character on stage.
Yeah, I love it. I love it because I kind of feel it's essentially who I am. You know, I'm music and theatre have been a huge part of my life, and so the marriage of the two, I so enjoy. So, I've worked with the Brentano String Quartet and Doric String Quartet, and
what narration does one do with the string quartet?
Well, Haydn. And Seven Last Words of Christ, for instance.
Oh, there you
yes.
go.
And
yes.
And I've done that a number of times. But I would say I've probably done Stravinsky's Soldier's Tale the most. And we did a fully staged production of Stravinsky's Soldier's Tale with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, with Anthony playing the soldier. I was narrator. But it was a fully staged production, which we toured and took to the Alborough Festival, the Cheltenham Festival, and ended up at the Wilton's Music Hall in London. We had a run there, and it was a very, very successful production.
And you've got a recording for us to listen
yes,
to.
Yes, I have a recording. This is actually when I played the devil, but this was a performance at the Portland Chamber Music Festival in the United States, in Maine, and I narrated the entire piece, played all the characters, but this is just a little snippet of me playing the devil.
The devil suddenly pops his head around the door. All right, I shall have to wait, but this realm of yours is not so great. If once its frontier should be passed, then you'll be in my power at last. So do not push your luck too far, or then, my lady, you will find that you are back in bed again. As for her prince, he can't pretend he doesn't know my patience now is at an end. He who laughs the last, he laughs most, as I shall do to watch him roast.
That was part of A Soldier's Tale by Igor Stravinsky, narrated by my guest, Walter van Dijk, playing the devil there. And Walter, just listening to that made me realize that you've said a few times how important music is for you. And you also said that you wanted to be a singer at one stage, an opera singer, and that you did a little bit of vocal training, which I'm sure also helped with this muscular thing that we were talking about earlier for your vocal technique on stage. That all must have helped.
Oh, enormously, enormously. I did a production of Two Gentlemen of Verona in the Open Air Theatre in Regent's Park in London, and also Cole Porter's High Society. But when doing Two Gentlemen of Verona, a number of the musical theatre actors said, you know, my goodness, Walter, we can hear you right at the back, and this is an open-air theatre.
Yes.
So I think it does help. I think having a good vocal technique, really.
And it's sad, am I right in saying that possibly that's becoming less important, as we were saying earlier? Many things are mic'd these days.
Yes.
Even Shakespeare. And it's sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is sad, yes.
But let's think of wonderful musical things. And what I find interesting is your partner, Anthony Marwood, who you told some lovely stories about, and we hope to see him playing in this country one day, by the way. You've brought along a recording of the violin concerto by Benjamin Britten that he recorded. Now, this isn't everybody's cup of tea, but I, for one, think it's a marvelous piece. But tell me, how was it, just because of Anthony playing it, or how did you get into it?
Well, it was actually, I went along to a rehearsal of Anthony doing the Britten Violin Concerto, and that's when I heard the piece for the first time. And it was a rehearsal with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Maren Alsop, and I was absolutely blown away by the piece.
Thank you.
part of Benjamin Britten's Violin Concerto with Anthony Marwood Violin and the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Ivan Volkov, another choice of my guest, Walter van Dijk. Walter, you've brought seven pieces of music along, and you're only allowed to bring four or five.
I know.
So we're going to have to get on here. And I see Michael Tippett coming up, but is this, because I wanted to ask you, you seem to spend some time in Africa.
Mm.
Cape Town has become a really, it's, you don't just come and work here, you come and visit.
Mm.
You, I think you come out once a year, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, for the past 18 years, every January for a few weeks. Yes.
So Cape Town and South Africa are important to you?
Oh, very much so. I love it here.
Is
I
there a link it. Between that love of a country like this compared to Europe and your next piece from Michael Tippett's oratorio, Child of Our Time?
Yes, there is. I sang in this work a long, long time ago. And again, I found it profoundly moving. It's an oratorio. It's structured in the same way that a Bach Passion is, but instead of the traditional chorale, Tippett chose African American spirituals, and I've chosen the last spiritual in the piece, Deep River. And if I may, I might just share some of the text with you.
Please do, Walter.
Deep River. My home is over Jordan. Deep river, Lord, I want to cross over into campground. Oh, don't you want to go to the gospel feast, that promised land where all is peace? Oh, deep river, Lord, I want to cross over into campground.
Thank you.
I think listening to that, Walter, your reading of the poem beforehand made all the difference for that excerpt from A Child of Our Time, Deep River, the music of Sir Michael Tippett. And we heard the BBC singers and the BBC Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir Colin Davis. Now, we've ended up talking about music, whereas we're here as an actor for Shakespeare in Love. I mean, the point is, your father was a composer, Martinus van Dijk, a fairly established Dutch composer.
Rudy Martinus van Dijk.
Okay. And what sort of style did he, what did he do?
Well, he was very influenced by the Second Viennese School. Very expressionistic writing. I think Alban Berg was a huge influence on him. But towards the latter part of his life, kind of more French transparent. Transparency entered into his compositional writing. The next piece that I've chosen is a fairly early work, but it's very accessible. It is a choral work called Now is the Prophet's Time. It's a Christmas cantata.
Okay, but before we get there, Walter,
yes.
You're not allowed to go just yet.
Yeah.
I just want to remind our listeners that you are here in Cape Town for the return season of Shakespeare in Love,
yes, which
is about to open at the Fugard.
Yes.
You play the part of Sir Edmund Tilney and...
Sir Robert de Lesseps.
Yes. Two not very nice characters, but it's
But actually, they're much more fun to play.
I'm sure they are. People, actors always say that the nasty people.
Well, it's true.
And then what do you do?
Well, I go back to the UK. I'm doing a Christmas show there. And then after the Christmas show, I am doing Alan Ayckbourn's Absurd Person Singular, which I'm also very much looking forward to.
Do you do any radio or television work
or
anything like that? And film, you've done lots of films, of course.
Not at all. There's just too much to talk about. I know, honestly. No, I've done a few Hollywood films. The Eagle, a lovely film called Incognito with Irene Jacob and Jason Patrick. And I've done quite a bit of television over the years, radio,
My goodness. Yeah. It's been great to talk to you.
Oh, it's been wonderful.
We haven't covered nearly enough.
I know. There's just too much to talk about.
Take two. When you're on holiday here again, come in and we'll talk about music and theatre and language and vocal techniques and things like that again, because that would be fascinating. In the meantime, we can see you on stage as Sir Edmund Tilney in Shakespeare in Love at the Fugard Theatre. But now we're going to end the program with this piece of music by your father, Rudy Martinus van Dijk, that you said is a sort of a Christmas cantata.
Yes, it's for full choir and orchestra and boys' choir, and I hope that as we play it, I like to think that somehow my father is looking down and hearing what we're about to give to the listeners. It's the boys' choir singing In Joy the Angels Sing, which then leads to its rousing conclusion.
Walter van Dijk, thank you. Thank you for being a guest on People of Note.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you, Rodney.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This December, something extraordinary is coming to Cape Town. Experience the global phenomenon Matilda the Musical, inspired by the magic of Roald Dahl, live on stage at Artscape. The New York Post says, believe the hype. Don't miss the musical of the decade, proudly brought to you by Peter Turin and GWB Entertainment in association with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Be a genius. Book now.